Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I'm Patrick Gilbert, Executive Director at Adventure Media Group. With me, as always, is Isaac Radansky, Founder and CEO of Adventure Media Group, and Danielle Immerman, the Content Queen. How's everyone doing? Isaac, what's up?
Doing great. I'm still trying to get over the embarrassment of the last phone call we just had.
Do you want to make this public, what you just did?
Literally called a client of ours, like, the absolute wrong name. I called him his wife's name. It was just horrible.
He was logged into the Google Hangout under his wife's account. But I think like we had actually sent you a Slack message right before. Just like, by the way, this is Justin. And you called him Taylor. But honestly, I think it's good to start those calls out, like setting the bar really low. Because I mean, the chances of you saying something worse than that, we can only go from there. Excited to talk today. I'm going to be asking Isaac a couple different questions about a few different theories and perspectives he has about the digital advertising landscape. Before I get it, though, we need to do the shameless plug. Came out with a book, Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation. It's available now on Amazon. Check it out. Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation. It's about how to leverage all the tools from machine learning and automation and smart bidding that is kind of taking over all the different ad platforms that we run ads on, whether it's Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, any sort of programmatic media buys. Check it out. It'll teach you how to run these sort of ad campaigns in the new automation era. So now that's out of the way. I want to talk today, Isaac, about you happen to have a lot of these strong and somewhat controversial opinions about whether it's the actual advertising industry or the way brands go about advertising and the way that they think about things. And I've heard you talk about a lot of these things tangentially. I'm sure Danielle has as well. Every once in a while, you'll just kind of come out of your office with just like a rant about this or that. But I think I want to elaborate on some of those thoughts more. I want to dive a little bit deeper because there's a lot of things that, whether I agree with or disagree with, I think it's kind of an interesting thing. I want to start out as far as like the current state of digital advertising. You've mentioned this a few times that you think that the current platforms have made brands lazy. So what do you mean by that? And what do you think is the antidote for that?
This is a bit of a can of worms, but I think it's worthwhile discussing and I'll try to formulate in some coherent way how I feel. And I don't think it's so controversial, but maybe it is. Let's talk about first human psychology for a moment. What is laziness? I don't really know, but it's a lot of things. A human has an action that they ought to do, or there's a task that they ought to do, and they don't do it. That could be a function of laziness, possibly. That might be one reason. Or though, there's a task or there's an action that someone ought to do, and instead of doing that task, they do the less strenuous available task, which appears to be a fulfillment of a goal, but it's not actually. And I think that's an important thing to realize first, that humans are conservative by nature. We will always expend the least possible amount of effort to attain a goal. It's literally how everybody is. I think it's just a basic function of human nature. There's no reason to expend more energy or effort. We do see this in biological processes and in human relationships. Like, we don't expend more effort than necessary, which tangentially is why, and I always go on these tangents and talk about writing or story or things like that, but I find that to be very relevant to advertising. When you read a story, storytellers have to keep this idea in mind that humans are conservative by nature, because that's why it's important to create forces of antagonism that force a hero or a protagonist to take dramatic steps. And without drama, there's no story and there's typically less dynamic movement. But how does that translate to business? Businesses are difficult to run, to operate, and to succeed. So there needs to be dramatic steps taken. And there are forces of antagonism present. There's competitors. Say you want to start a mattress company. Well, what are the forces of antagonism? There's a lot of them. There's Casper. There's Lisa. There's Sofamania. There's 100 other brands on Amazon and Wayfair and Walmart. And guess what? Mattresses are a commodity. They're all the same damn thing after a while. There's springs, there's memory foam. Okay, now that should not necessarily discourage you from starting a mattress company. Okay, but there's severe forces of antagonism. How does digital advertising play into this whole idea of laziness? I've seen the insidious appeal. And I say insidious because insidious is something which often on the surface looks very glamorous and very glorious and very glitzy. But under the surface, it's deceptive. So I've seen a lot of brands gravitate towards digital advertising as a way to avoid the more difficult work and tasks that are necessary for them to achieve the goal. And let's say in this case, in our example, launching a profitable and successful mattress company. Now, just drive this one step further. So let's go back to our example. We tie in human psychology here. So the human psychology says humans are conservative. And one function of laziness is that a person will take a less strenuous route instead of the route that they must take to achieve their goal. So the mattress company is like, well, I need to go and hire a CFO, and I have to go and fly back and forth to China to spend a month in the factories and looking at the best possible materials and to negotiate deals with my supply chain. And I have to hire a UX designer so the usability on the site is top notch, doing qualitative and quantitative research. I need to price test. I don't know how to price test, so I need to hire a statistician who knows the price elasticity theory. I need to bring in people and sleep test the mattresses and post reviews. I might have to actually go door to door with mattresses in my trunk from retailer to retailer, local mom and pop shops within a 200-mile radius of where I live just to get some media coverage. But they don't do that because Google promises on a beautiful landing page, just put up your ad. Just put up your ad. Look, it's just a headline. It's just some text. All you have to do is a credit card. No invoicing. It's a credit card. And look, your keywords. People are searching Google for mattresses all day long. So from morning till night, we're going to send you traffic. And time again, we're seeing that it's not that simple. It's deceptive. Because, well, let me pause there. There's a lot of reasons why it doesn't end up working out. But that's why I feel that these digital advertising platforms, which have perfected the sell, the art of the sell, if you look at the Facebook landing pages, if you look at the Google AdWords landing pages over the years, they've been optimizing the landing pages. It used to be the brothers who were making tree houses, and then it was the local dance studio, and it was very, very... Robert Cialdini, author of Influence and Persuasion, would have a lot of good things to say about these landing pages that promised a leveling of the playing field and every small business could succeed. And we've seen, because we're the ones that are actually held accountable for individual campaign performance. Google's held accountable to the performance in aggregate. We're held accountable at a much smaller slice of the pie on an individual client-by-client basis. So we actually have to post performance for each client. And we've seen time and time again that it is not that simple. So I feel that the digital advertising platforms, the availability, the reach, the scale, the easiness of it, the appeal of it has, maybe they haven't made clients lazy. They've allowed and they've given opportunity to be lazy. And I say this confidently because I'll tell you this. When we started 6 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever it is, I created a website. And I didn't do it lazily. I spent, you know, countless hours copying pixel for pixel other websites and competitors and so on and so forth. And I was like, okay, let me launch some ads. This is what I do. I'm going to launch Google Ads. And it was a very rude and fast awakening because 3 days later, I'm $7,000 in the hole on a credit card that I have to pay. I did not have the money to pay it. And I had no clients because my clicks were costing me $75, $80 a click for AdWords management agency, PPC company in New York. Like, you know, that was that expensive. And I didn't get any clients out of it. Maybe I got one or two form submissions. They ended up going to somebody else. Now, $7,000, $8,000, that's unsustainable. So I had to pause everything. And I had to say, okay, well, it's not going to be so easy to have a business. I'm going to have to do the hard work. And then I printed out 700 pamphlets wire bound. I borrowed some money to do that. I went with my brother-in-law to Huntington, to Cold Spring Harbor, to Roslyn, to basically every small town in Long Island and Suffolk County. And I went door to door to door to door, handing out pamphlets. I think I got one small client out of that. Then I started doing work for free. Then I started researching and just being better at my skills. I worked on creating content. I spent hours, nights, months creating a YouTube tutorial, a course, writing up articles, and thinking about solutions to tiny clients that were paying me next to nothing just so I would get better. Whatever. So this is just one, it's one tiny business and agency. There's a million businesses. But the point is that a digital advertising platform does not replace all the other things that are necessary, that are difficult, and they will not compensate for those things. But they look so shiny and so immediate that brands, and at least a few times a week, I deal with a prospect on the phone that is in this exact position. I look at their website, I look at their product, I look where they are in the market. I was like, and they're like, well, let's just spend on Google and Facebook and you're going to do great, right? And I said, no, I don't really see this being a worthwhile endeavor for you, to be honest. So that's my brief version.
But don't you think that more people would have the experience that you had where they learn very quickly that that's not the case? And to looking at Google specifically, it's 15 plus years that millions of businesses across the world have been successful. You're sort of describing your initial act as a failure. But clearly, the vast majority of people who continue to spend money on Google are doing so because they're finding success with it. So either, in my mind, based on what you just described, either it's a lazy platform because it's easy enough that almost anyone can be successful, or they figure it out anyway. Like they figure out to also do the hard things. It's just something else that is an easy thing to turn on while you're also doing the hard things. Like one of those things has to kick into gear.
So I think you're asking two good questions on my perspective here. Let me repeat the questions as I understand them. One is, then what's the big deal? The same way I started off with the lazy approach and I switched to the hard approach. So other businesses will do that also. And then secondarily, the proof is in the pudding. Google's the largest advertising platform in the world. They wouldn't be if brands weren't successful and profitable. Let me see if I can answer both questions. The first question is, unfortunately, I think that a lot of brands, and I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but I think that I don't play the victim. I blame myself for everything. So my outlook when my ad campaigns failed and I wasn't profitable, I just looked inward and I recognized my own laziness. I think we've seen clients who blame their last agency. They blame the world. They blame the seasonality. They blame Google for stealing their money. They blame their agency for going to using automation and being lazy. They take this very outward perspective when things don't go wrong, and they're just looking for the next agency. And not everybody, and I'm not talking about everybody. I'm saying that it's, and maybe you're right. Maybe it's not that these platforms have created this, like, I don't mean this pervasive laziness. It is a trap that you have to be very careful about. And there are plenty of small businesses falling into the trap. Yes, it's true. Google is extremely successful because the vast majority of businesses that have continued to advertise with Google are successful. That has to be economically true. Unless you believe that there's some like shadow organization that's putting guns to people's heads and forcing them to spend on Google. But assuming that that's not the case, it's the same thing with survivorship bias. You're not polling the millions of businesses that are no longer advertising on Google, that were never profitable, that were never successful. It's the same exact thing as survivorship bias. So yeah, if you look at the existing pool of advertisers still advertising on Google, which is enough to make them the most powerful advertising platform on earth, yes, I would agree with you. I would have to assume that the majority of those are profitable. But let's poll all the ones that dropped out that are not success stories. There are many of them. And I think many of them probably could be success stories. Now, it's true. Google will not work for every possible business, but it really should. Meaning, it's an auction system. It's an English auction system, right? So you're only paying basically a penny above the advertiser below you. That should, in theory, create a platform that could work for any business. Unless there's like a group of businesses in one niche that just have a crazy profit margin advantage and knock somebody out, which is what happens. So you like you say, okay, like, look, you're selling iPhone cases, but all your competitors selling iPhone cases, they're making them in China and their margins are 70% and they're bidding as such. You're making them here in a studio in Kentucky. Your margins are 15, 20%. They're a little bit nicer, but that's not where the market's at. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to be aggressive enough and hit the margins. Your clicks have to be 20 cents. There's no such thing as a 20 cent click for iPhone cases. Like, your business maybe will work with a groundswell, organic movement. There's other ways to market it, but not with a digital advertising platform because you have to follow a basic trend of market dynamics amongst your cohort. So I hear your point. I think that I would still say there exists a trap that's easy to fall into that these digital advertising platforms have, I guess, fairly, it's, I wouldn't call it exploitative. I don't think Google and Facebook are exploitative. I think it's within their right to make their products sound as good as they want it to sound. I've just spoken to hundreds of businesses that like just say, wow, digital advertising, if I could just get my ads on Google, it's going to be like, and I thought that I'm not stupider than the average person. I'd say I'm average, but I fell into the same trap. I felt extremely excited. I remember these conversations I used to have with my wife. I was like, if I could just get my website up, I'm running Google ads, I'm going to get a client every day. It's crazy. Like when I made my painting website, I called my mother. I was like, I'm going to be a $1 million artist because anyone searching for oil painting is finding my ad. And then 9 hours later, and $700 in the toll, I was like, well, I'm actually in worse than I was a day ago.
So, but I think the idea of the laziness, come back to that, is like, you're sort of blaming the marketing messaging of, say, Google in this example, by making it seem as if it's so easy, as opposed to framing it in a way that actually explains all the hard work that goes into it. And as a result, a lot of people potentially do fail. I think it's an interesting point for you to reference survivorship bias here by saying that, you know, Google's the largest advertising company on the planet. Obviously, people have been successful, but I would agree. There's probably tons and tons of people, maybe more, that have failed than have had success. And I think you're arguing that their failure is a condition of their inability to realize that it is actually harder than it is. And I think it's not necessarily... like at the very beginning of this, you described essentially a definition of laziness. And it's funny. I mean, years ago, you called something out that I did as lazy, and it infuriated me because I think you and I have different definitions of what this term means. But I think you had said...
I did. That's terrible. I didn't mean to say that.
It was in an email or something. And you were like, this is a lazy sentence. It drove me crazy because I was like, what do you like? It was like a long email that I put a lot of work into, and you called it lazy, but it wasn't that it was like a half-assed job, which is sort of what I think of when I hear the term lazy. You were describing it, which is probably the correct way to do it, but it was like the word choice should have been better. It could have been optimal in a different way, which is something I think about all the time.
But it also sounds like the way I delivered my feedback could have been a lot better.
I think what we're getting at here is there's this issue that a lot of brands, and I think that, let's just call it what it is, a lot of our clients have incorrectly thought that their results should be better than they really are, or could be, I guess, that they should be doing better than they really are based on this concept of it's not actually as easy as you think it is. I personally believe that it's a result of not laziness, but stubbornness. For when somebody turns on that first smart shopping campaign and the results are through the roof and they're like, okay, we'll just do this at scale, right? We'll just do this forever. Or, you know, they have a little bit of, they throw a couple $100 of Facebook advertising and they see some success. So, okay, we can do this. It's not that hard. Anyone can do this. They make it seem easy. I'm seeing the results. And then I would say, and I think you would probably agree with this, that no, sure, anyone can capture bottom funnel traffic in the way that you probably have in your experience. But if you really want to be a successful business, you do need to invest the hard work in building a brand.
Right. But you're calling that stubborn. I would say that's more like stupidity or just short-sightedness or lack of education. If someone does not realize that there's an inverse relationship between return and scale and cost, then that's just a lack of education. Or stubbornness to me is a little bit closer aligned with laziness, where it's like, I'm fixated on this idea that if I could just find the right expert, my business will do really well. It's not an internal, there's nothing wrong with my product or my pricing or my manufacturing process or my customer service. I would group that together with a laziness. Maybe it's like an intellectual laziness, or it's a stubbornness, or it's some sort of other bias. But then there's also lack of education. We've sometimes been successful with a client or a prospect that we show them that, listen, they're in the marketplace, and this is a marketplace like any other, there's going to, as you grow, you know, listen, like your first $10, Google's going to spend it on the clicks that are available that are the most likely to convert, but there's only a finite number of those. But oftentimes we're not successful in communicating that message. And that comes back to an intellectual laziness or a stubbornness.
What about ad copy? You've also said that there's a sad decline in good copy and you don't really see it anymore. And it's one of the primary critiques, I think, that you have when looking at other ad campaigns or other, you know, landing pages, websites, and so on.
Yeah, and I think it's just almost an inevitable thing where advertising has become so pervasive, and there's been almost a negative outlook and attitude towards it. If you, let's say you go back to the 50s and 60s, let's say, consumer psychology was very different then. A housewife would wait for an oven manufacturer to educate them about the newest model and techniques. It was the advertiser that dictated the where, the when, the how of product education. Kids would wait to get a Sears catalog, and they would all pore over it and look at the pictures and read the copy and circle and rip out and hang on their wall. It was a whole different world of brands thinking of creative and persuasive ways to communicate with consumers. It is now the exact opposite. Consumers dictate the where, when, and how of product education. So brands have to be very careful. We don't want to bother you. We don't want to look like an ad, which is why this whole native ad thing is huge, right? Like, basic, what is native advertising? It's just a euphemism for saying camouflaged advertising. It's just a way to get around all the bad rap that advertising has developed. What does Google test the most? They test like that little green or black or transparent or gray ad icon. They test that all the time. And Google's done a very good job at this. I mean, I think Google was the absolute king in native advertising. If you talk about native advertising, you talk about Taboola and whatever, but like Google's really the paradigm of native advertising, because their ads, they forced with quality score, they forced advertisers to create relevant pieces of content that looked, felt, and were as useful as Google's organic results. I mean, it doesn't get more native than that as far as I'm concerned. Which all that's to say is there's a lot of it. A lot of the strategies now rely on technology and tracking and optimization at scale at data. The art of communicating a message has been lost, but it's also not really the advertiser's fault so much, because the consumers are not really reading as much as they used to read. You know, Nielsen Norman Group, they've pioneered studies on web readability. And with eye tracking software, they basically proved that people don't read copy on the web. They scan. There's so much out there. There's so many web pages to read. There are so many products. If I'm scanning through a gift to get Aaron Zev from Amazon, it's just absurd the amount of information I have to go through that I'm no longer reading anything. I'm just scanning for price. I'm scanning for the keyword. I'm scanning for some call out text that I already believe I want to see. I don't have a brand affinity where I'm looking to read about this brand and this product and what makes it special. And I think a lot of consumers fall into that camp. It's just a huge amount of information overload. They no longer have the time or the attention to read messaging. And it's an art form that's been lost to a degree. There are still examples, though. There are still examples where the consumer does do a lot of research and they read a lot of copy, especially when it comes to larger ticket decisions, decisions related to business software, decisions related to purchases of a higher import. Consumers do still seem to read a lot, and they read carefully. So there's no rules. Like, there's nothing that's a universal rule or a blanket statement. But when we started, Patrick, I used to be much more into like the whole like writing headlines and really creativity and descriptions. And it's like, we've just seen it. Like, no one's reading the descriptions of a Google ad. Like, they're looking at the headline. They're going to click. They're going to open the top three ads. The whole relevance of writing a headline is not as impactful as it once was, as it used to be.
So there's three different outcomes of what you just described. So if we just look at text ad copy, I would agree. Writing a good headline is sort of the anti-keyword. Because if you're going to keyword stuff your headlines, you're not giving a lot of room for like real creative that really sells your product. To me, there's always been these two kind of polar sides of it, where there's like, write a boring ad that's very keyword centric and relevant to what the person is searching for. And then there's the other where it's like, try to be cute. And I think the cuteness element you see a lot with like competitor campaigns, where people are trying to say something, you know, you're bidding on a term for, you know, whatever you sell. Use the mattress example earlier. Someone's searching for Casper mattress, right? And you're the rival that's trying to take down Casper. So you bid on that keyword with a headline that says like, don't trust Casper, like, I don't know, something better than that. You know what I'm getting at though. Those are kind of two separate sides of it. So it's either the good copy is harmful or it just doesn't matter and it doesn't move the needle and it's probably a waste of time to even think about it. So what do you think? Is it taking the time to write a really good headline and really good descriptions, specifically with Google search? Because let's just start there, because as you get to different platforms, it becomes more dynamic. But at Google search, is it worth it to take the time to write better headlines, or is it harming performance, or does it ultimately not matter?
You know what I'm going to say. I'm going to ask you, how much time do you have? How much is your time worth? Is it worth it? It's like, unfortunately, it hurts me to say this, but I don't think so. Again, it does if you have unlimited amount of time. I don't think it harms. I could think it could only help. I don't think Google is like, maybe it was like this in the beginning when we started, that like showing the keyword showing up in the headline really mattered with quality score. They've gotten much more savvy since then, more refined. I don't see it harming. I don't see really good taking the time to write really good headlines and really good descriptions harming. It could only be good. It enhances your skills. If you learn some things about copywriting, that's good. I still think the descriptions are very, as far as what I would consider good copy, it's like, yeah, just put in the key ideas. And then the headline, use it to, I tell our team, like, you should work to find something objective. It's a very simple rule. If you can't find something objective about your client's product, then keep researching or get the client back on the phone. Find something. And when I say objective, it's very simple. It means something that means the same thing to everybody. So 98% of customers rate us as 5 stars. That's an objective. 98% means the same thing to everybody. If I say we're the most loved software, that's subjective. If I say we're the fastest internet, that's subjective. That means fast means something different to everybody. If I say our internet packages get you, you know, 500 gigabytes down for $85 a month, I've said two objective things. Now, that might not be the snappiest copy you're going to find in a world's greatest advertisements book one day, but it's a lot better. It's a lot better than what most people are doing when it comes to writing headlines, because you've pinpointed something objective that is meaningful to anyone reading it. And you actually have communicated it a lot more than you think you have about a product. So that's what I try to incorporate, at the very least. Try to find something objective. Again, going back to laziness, I look at headlines that are subjective, that could have been written by anybody, that could be slapped on any competitor and be true, and I just feel they're lazy.
So what would you say then to an account manager that has a account full of objective headlines, good ad group structure, the whole nine, but the client feels that they should be testing more creative types of ad copy? Because going back to what you said earlier, it depends on how much time you have. But when you hire an agency, you're not necessarily being billed by the hour, you're paying a fixed rate or you're a percentage of media, whatever. You don't care how much time they spend. So you expect this element. And I think it's very hard for the agency to turn around and say, look, it doesn't matter. So what do you say to that? To them would seem lazy.
Right. My basic position is first education, then genuflection. So
is that a word?
Yeah. It means to bow down.
Okay.
Genuflect. Educate and then genuflect. I would first say, listen, try to educate the client. Try to tell the client that we have better things to do with our time. Explain to them why your ads are good, why continuing to test these descriptions and these site links are not going to make a difference. I've been down this road before. We have a lot of experience. We have better things to do with our time. Here's what we're doing with our time. And if the client doesn't accept it and is just extremely fixated on running tests, then by all means, run the tests, right? The clients are paying your bills, run the tests. And I am also of the attitude that you could always be proven wrong. You could always learn something new. You always might stumble upon a headline or a description or a site link that works really well. There's exceptions to every rule. So listen, we're not talking about something that is going to tank an account. Testing new creative and testing ads typically is going to be okay thing to do. There's a certain point with click-through rate, you're not going to really climb behind unless you offer a free car if you click the ad. And that's no good.
I would say I sort of agree with that, the way that I look at that, because I kind of hate those sorts of things. I hate that we live in this world where we have to do things. I look at this and say, we have to continue to update ad copy. even though I would recognize and you would probably recognize that it's sort of a waste of time, but there's just certain things you have to do. I don't know why. I really can't explain it because I don't think a lot of clients are going to hear that on the other end. There's always going to be the devil's advocate saying, yeah, but how do you know that for sure? And I think it's important to continue to do that, even if you have to do it reluctantly, and to try and do it well, because ultimately, at least some of the time, you're going to be wrong. And this is sort of what you're getting at here. At least some of the time, you're going to realize, oh, the ad copy does actually matter. And I think when you take that and turn it on its head, I think that sort of attitude of like, okay, well, maybe we're not always right. And I think that's really, really important when trying to look at every single client is different. Every keyword is different. So even though 99% of the time the ad copy is not going to matter, you need to still put the work into it to try and make it work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just like looking at a landing page now for an agency because I typed in our agency name. There's some other agency that their headline is Adventure Media's number one competitor, which I don't think is true, but I clicked their ad anyway to cost them some money.
And that's a lazy headline because I've seen that number one competitor. Like I've written that ad copy. I've written that.
It's totally a lazy headline. Well, the laziness continues on their website. I see things like here. We're a secret weapon that will catapult your business. What the hell does that even mean? What do you mean a secret weapon? And what do you mean by catapult? It's just absolute meaninglessness. Here's another one. We'll lower your click costs dramatically. Like, okay, that's another thing that means nothing to anybody. Here's a good one. Your phones will ring off the hook. It's like, again, ultimately it's meaningless. And faced with a better, clearer option, people are going to gravitate towards the understood and the clear, which, by the way, gets me back to your other question, which is why do clients tend to be so fixated on an ad copy? Because it's the one thing that it's so understood about digital advertising by them. Clients, they don't know a keyword, search term, bidding, max CPC, auction. Like, you have to realize, like, taking the empathetic approach, this is gibberish to them. And it was gibberish to me when I started. But an ad and an ad copy is a very clearly understood concept. They understand what that is. My own parents, I think that's the beginning and end of how much they understand of what it is we do, even though I've tried to explain it to them a lot of times. Yeah, it's Google, it's auction, it's quality score. Here, watch this video. It's like,
every time I talk to my mom, she has a new like commercial that she hates, that she's like, I don't get it. Like, why are they doing this? Or it bothered me that they did that. Why are they doing this? And it's always a company like Apple. So it's always someone that's like good enough that you just have to trust that what they're doing is right. And like the fact that you remembered it and you're repeating it to me and you understand this, that's what makes it good.
Yeah.
It's so funny. So the last question I have for you, to summarize it real quick, like, what do you think is the antidote to laziness?
I think there are a few. One, I think at least talking only about, again, I'm not an expert in this. I think a big thing is practicing intrinsic analysis. And the word blame is not what I'm looking for. Accountability. When a person begins to think more internally about accountability and less externally about accountability, just a whole new outlook on life becomes open to them. We are all like this to a large extent. If in one area of life we do it somewhere else. We'll be quick to place accountability extrinsically. And then that leaves us very open to the traps of laziness. Because if we could just believe, and it's not that we even notice consciously that we're doing this. If you actually believe that this was the problem. I actually believe that if I had a higher definition monitor, I wouldn't have made that mistake. And maybe that's true, but it's no use thinking that way. So I think if I were to suggest a tool, I would say for the next week, try to be conscientious about all the things that have went wrong in your day, and whether or not, forget all the rational arguments, whose fault it was, what happened, build a scenario in your head that had you done something different, that wouldn't have happened. And practice that way of living and way of thinking, and just orient yourself more internally, and you're going to start thinking of what else you could do. And when you start thinking, what else can I do? What else can I do to better my situation? As opposed to what did this person do to worsen my situation? What else can I do? You're going to be forced to explore the harder work and the more difficult work and the more proactive work. And so I think that's something. It's definitely something.
Excellent. Last question. How would you hide a dead body?
Absolutely on the second page of Google.
All right. Excellent. Another episode of How to Hide a Dead Body. Thanks for sticking with us. Check out Join or Die Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation, order your copy today, available on Amazon.